Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film, featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
And today we're talking about the 2014 movie Big Hero 6.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, so this is like the second time I've seen it ever, which is kind of like weird, I guess, because I guess people tend to rewatch Disney films a lot. So how many times have you seen it, Melissa?
A lot.
Like, can you give us a
probably number? If I was gonna give you a number, it'd probably be 10.
Wow. Okay.
I've seen it a lot.
Yeah, so
and was still
this
good. Part
of the we watched this together in college, right?
We did.
In the cinema,
yeah.
Yeah.
And when they replayed it, they did it like a movie night.
You mean like in like the student union or?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I was at the student union one.
So I saw it, you know.
Yeah.
A few times there.
I'm just trying to. This movie came out in 2014.
Correct.
What month?
I want to say November.
Yeah, sounds right. Where?
Because I'm pretty sure I went for my birthday.
Okay. Let me see. So yeah, release date was November 7th, 2014. Okay, yeah. So we watched it together. Oh, you know why I probably wasn't there? Because I was probably in London. Whenever the screener came out or whatever.
Whatever. It literally doesn't matter.
Anyway. Yeah. So we have seen it together before. I remember it being cute, but I don't really... And I remembered, like, the villain, but I didn't really remember... like most of the story. I just really mainly remembered like the beginning, and that was really it. I mean, like, I definitely read some articles after I watched it and kind of agreed with what they were saying. Like, it's a cute flick, but it's ultimately like not super memorable, even though like the comic guy it's based on is super weird. Like,
yeah,
it's definitely like when you look at like, I mean, it's definitely a very conventional story, but you can, like, tell, like, the source material is very, very strange and very different, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's what made it memorable to me, is that, like, yes, like, the plot itself is nothing really special, but everything surrounding it is so creative and so new that that's not... I don't come back to it because... it has a great plot.
Yeah. I mean, the environment and the graphics are gorgeous. Awesome. Yeah.
You know, visually it's gorgeous. The characters, I think, they all get their moment to shine. I think a lot of the writing is really smart. I really think it's, you know, it's solid.
So, yeah, let's go. So, Big Hero 6. Does a title work for the movie?
Not really.
Because it's not an ensemble. It feels like the six kind of implies an ensemble. And it's not... I mean, there is a group, but it's not really, like, the group story.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it an ensemble movie, but... Yeah. The way that it always felt to me is that, like, it felt like it was leading up to, like, a sequel. And I do think that the fact that it has six on the end definitely threw people off because they think it's like the sixth movie in the series.
Oh, I didn't think of it that way, but sure, sure.
I've heard that before, but I don't know what... I'm bad at giving titles, but I mean, it's good enough.
Yeah, because, I mean, who's like the team? I guess, should we include Baymax in the team? So we got Baymax, Hero... I'm just reading off the Internet Movie Database. Fred, Gogo, Wasabi, Honey Lemon, and, okay. I guess that is six, I guess.
Yes, they counted correctly.
Yeah, it works. it's just such an odd... I mean, I know why they did it, because it's based off of, like, a comic, but, like, choices. So,
Like the title, you mean?
Yeah, like I wonder what else if there could have been a different title that was more apt. But I
How
mean,
to grieve?
What?
How to grieve?
Out to grieve? Yeah, I mean, I definitely thought about that. Like, I feel like Disney movies, like, sometimes will touch upon grief, but this feels like the most like direct and profound Disney movie. I mean, aside from Bambi, I guess. But I didn't even watch Bambi, so.
And then, I never cared for Bambi, honestly. What? I never cared for Bambi, but.
I mean, and I guess in Lion King, he deals with his father's stuff. But it's not like the centerpiece of the story, I guess.
Yeah, it's completely overt. It's essentially the crux of the entire story.
Right.
Everything. And it's both what drives the hero and the villain.
Right. So that was kind of cool. Because I feel like I don't really see that in Disney movies.
Yeah.
Like them exploring grief. So there's that. Let me see. Shall we just get into it with the settings and the beginnings and whatever?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. I like how like the opening shot was like of the Golden Gate Bridge, but it looks like those like Shinto gates. I think they're called Torii. I looked them up the other day. I think they're called Torii. Look it up.
The setting is just gorgeous.
It's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. So good.
So we instantly know, you know, where we are. We're in a different world. So where, you know, the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge has, like, this Japanese influence, and San Francisco is this Japanese-influenced American city, I guess. And I love how everything's so, like, integrated with, like, how the culture's integrated. So we have, like, these samurai bots, and there's, like, they're, like, basically in a sumo ring, and... What did I even write? Sometimes I can't read my handwriting. What does that say? I think I tried to... I was writing quickly, and then I was abbreviating words. But then it doesn't make sense. Oh, I understand what it says. Okay, whatever. I'll get back to that later. It's a later problem. But yeah, I love how, like, it's very... From the very beginning, it's very strong. Like, we get a strong sense of the environment, which is really cool. And San Francisco is just gorgeous, so it was really cool to see them combine all that stuff.
And, like, it continues throughout. Like, the city itself seems like another character.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they have the car chase, they have where Hiro's, like, walking through the streets following Baymax. Like,
yo, was it me, or was that very, very reminiscent of, like, Mulan? And, like, the whole... Grandma's crossing the street with Cricket.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
I didn't even think of that, but that's good.
Yeah, because I was like, this reminds me of yet another Disney film.
Lucky Cricket,
yeah.
Such a good movie.
You know they're doing a live-action Mulan?
Yeah, without songs.
Without songs! What the heck?
I know.
So iconic. Ugh. Reflection. I'll make a man out of you. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Ugh. Tragic.
I mean, some people are like, oh, they're trying to market it to the Chinese audience, and they didn't like the musical version that much in 98, so whatever. Yo, I can't believe that came out in 98. Don't 98, man. I was in, like, kindergarten or something. Ugh,
whatever,
I feel so old.
You're young and beautiful.
Yeah, so the setting is gorgeous. Just, like, I love how, like, there, again, so much attention to detail, like, how on those trolley cars, there's those lanterns, and it's like, almost kind of, like, Blade Runner-y, in a way, because of, like, the Japanese influences. I don't think you've seen Blade Runner.
I have not, no.
But it's, like in a futuristic Asian world, and it's just really, it's really nice. I know I have, like, more, like, dotted throughout my notes, like, more... kind of me noticing culture and background and environment stuff being combined. But yeah. So we meet Hiro. He's a, like... Well, we don't meet him first, because first we see that Yama, I guess is his name. We see Yama defeating some, like, goth punk girl in a robo, sumo, whatever, battle thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And Hero pulls, like, the oldest trick in the book.
Oh, yeah, where he's like, oh, look at little innocent me, and I'll pretend that I'm,
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and then I will destroy you, which is always fun. So he's like, the beginning of the story, right, is kind of like the older brother is like trying to lead his genius younger brother away from this path of depravity, which is not really depravity, but more like, you know, like he's doing illegal stuff. He's gonna get, he kind of was put in jail. I mean, it was more like his brother was in jail and he was staring at him from the other side, but yeah, he's like trying to put him on like the straight path.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, oh, I'm so smart, I can do illegal things and do whatever I want, whatevs.
But like even more than that, like I feel like he really wants Hiro to use his brain.
Yeah.
You know? Like, because what he's doing like is okay, but it's not really challenging him enough.
Right. Right. He's just getting all that cash and being like, well, I mean, this is easy.
I can't be too mad though. Like, cash is good.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. But, oh, sorry, I want to just backtrack a little bit. So, the whole setting of San Francisco, it's like an AU, basically. So, I'm trying to, I should pull up the article where I read it, but I think one of the artistic directors was talking about how, this is based on an AU where in, like, I guess 1906 or 1908, when there was that San Francisco earthquake, it was rebuilt by, like, Japanese immigrants, and then so that's why the town is more Japanese influenced than like.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I have to pull up the article. I want to say it was it's either in Internet Movie Database trivia or like somewhere else. Mm.
That's cool though.
Yeah, because I didn't. I mean, we kind of just take it for like, oh, this is a cool place, whatever. But it's always nice to kind of think about. Like backstory and how they're coming up with these ideas. Let's see if I can find it.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to add? Oh, yeah, I found it.
Okay.
So this is from Internet Movie Database. According to Scott Watanabe, the movie is set in an alternate future where after the 1906 earthquake, San Francisco was rebuilt by Japanese immigrants using techniques that allow movement and flexibility in a seismic event. After the city was finished being rebuilt, it was renamed San Francisco due to it being a city with Japanese and American architecture combined. So that is, like, the backstory for why it was, like, a, I guess, Japanese-ified version of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, anything you want to add about, like, the background or the environment or the world building? Or the intro. I know this spat out a bunch of things.
The introduction is very clean, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They get in, you get into the action very quickly, you care about the characters quickly, you get a very strong sense of character, you get a strong sense of place, and it's just really good.
Yeah. I'm always struck by this when I'm watching Disney movies again for like the second, third, fourth time. I'm always like, wow, this feels so much shorter than the first time. Like, because they really don't, there's no extra stuff in a Disney film. Like, it's all very compact, which makes sense. I mean, I guess like any kind of good children's movie is gonna be compacted to the point and not be a long, you know, 3-hour Lord of the Rings slog or something.
Yes.
Just saying.
I mean, sometimes we all want a Lord of the Rings slog, but this is not, I mean, I don't know. I could have used more time to dabble in this world, but I can't complain about, like, it's not like I would want them to fill it with fluff.
Mm-hmm.
If they had more room, I think they could have really developed the complexity of the plot itself, but it's still a kids' movie.
It was so interesting when I was reading, like, the trivia and all this, like, you know, world building and background stuff, there was so much more planned plot-wise. There was so much more, there were more, like, villains and, like, side plots and stuff that just didn't make the final cut.
That's too bad.
Yeah. I mean, some of the designs for those other characters were, like, really awesome. Like, I mean, I guess it sounds stereotypical, but then when I saw the designs, I was like, oh, wait, no, that's kind of cool. There, Yama had, like, these, like, I guess the best way to describe them would be, like, geisha roller girls who were, like, minions, I guess? Yeah. And I was like, when I heard that evil geishas, I was like, okay. But then I saw the like, art designs, and I was like, oh, that actually looks, like, pretty cool, not gonna lie. I'll send you a picture of, like, the artwork. I'll link to it in the show notes, but it looks fantastic. And I was like, I could have done with some, like, geisha roller girls. Like, they look like really cool characters. Yeah. More interesting to me than, I don't know, was it Cray and, like, Callahan?
Yeah. Like,
interesting choice for it to be, like, evil old white guys. And our main protagonist is multiracial. So Hiro is multiracial. He's played by Ryan Potter, who's also multiracial. And same thing for Tadashi, also played by a multiracial actor. Daniel Henney. Have you seen Daniel Henney in anything? Because apparently he's been in a bunch of, like, K-dramas.
Yeah, I've seen him before.
Wait, is he any good in those dramas?
Yeah, he's good and he's cute, so...
He is cute, yeah.
I'm trying to remember which ones, like, the titles. I'd have to look it up. But I know I have seen him, and he's pretty good.
What's the one that's, like, is it My Name is Kim something? Do you know Sam what I'm talking Soon? About? Yeah, isn't it Kim Sansoon or something?
Yeah, oh, I've seen that one.
This is sad. Nintendo Movie Database doesn't report dramas.
Okay. That's tragic.
Whatever. I guess I have to go to Wikipedia for that information.
Anyway, I love Tadashi so much.
As a character, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. Like, I mean, it's like, that's like we always say, the father must die. I mean, in this case, his parents are already dead. So who's next? The brother must die.
I don't know, like, I really do enjoy this movie, but it's so not fair.
Oh, I know life absolutely. Isn't fair.
But, like, this time in particular, it just struck me, like, the villain is someone who thought he lost his daughter, did bad stuff, inadvertently killed Tadashi, and then at the end, he gets his daughter back.
Well, not really, because he ends up going to jail.
Well, yeah, but, like,
I don't think
she's
he's
alive.
Like,
She's alive.
Yeah, yeah.
So he does get her back.
Right.
So, like...
But he doesn't... I thought it was kind of implied that he... Even though she's back and alive and well, like, I don't think he's going to see her. We don't really know what happened after.
The way that I kind of read it was, like, he was just glad that she was okay.
Right, but also,
and, I mean,
it seems to be some regret because
like
you're going to
She would still visit him.
True, true, true. Yeah, you got a point. Oh,
yeah,
by the way, the drama was My Lovely Samsoon, which translates to My Name is Kim Samsoon or something.
Yeah, it had multiple titles in English. Yeah. But yeah, I've seen that. It's pretty old.
It's so funny that he's like super big and like people were super crazy about him in Korea. He's also been in a bunch of other random things, like Hawaii Five-O, NCIS,
Never
Criminal
watched
Minds.
That.
You know, I just watched a video on AV Club about how nobody watches NCIS, even though it's, like, one of the most highly rated, like, TV shows. It's just, like,
how
no one watches it, though.
Work?
Yeah, I don't know how that works. But, yeah, Tadashi, I just feel like he's, like, at least in the year that it came out, and he just looks like... Like, your dream hipster nerd boy. Like...
You mean me? Or, like, in general?
You're not a dream hipster nerd boy.
No, like, my dream hipster nerd boy.
No, I mean, like, in, like, a general sense.
Okay.
In a general sense. What? I mean, maybe... Is he your dream?
You said
your... What?
No, you said he's your dream
boy. That was like a you all.
I wasn't like sure. I was clarifying. You, I wasn't Melissa. Sure if you were talking to me.
Anyway, I mean, is he? Maybe he is. I don't know.
Yeah, he is.
Because he has, like, what? He has, like, the cardigan and the mint chucks and, like, the like, baseball hat. I mean, like, all he needed was, like, the Ray-Ban style glasses, and he would have been, like, all the way there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But he's, yeah, he's, like, super lovable and, like, lovable old brother, like, older brother, and you're like, oh my gosh, he just wants the best for Hiro, and, you know, he's, like, he made Baymax to, you know, make healthcare more accessible, and it's just, like,
he's just, like,
you perfect human being.
Yeah. He's just a good soul, you know?
Yeah. Gary That's Stu? Why. Gary Stu?
No.
No.
Gary Stu, by its very definition, has to be, like, the like a main driver of plot, I think.
Well, he kind of does drive the plot. But, like, Hiro's trying to avenge
his
death.
A direct driver. The only thing that drives the plot in this case is, in fact, his death, which I wouldn't call that. I mean, like, is he perfect? Well, we don't really get to see him long enough to see his flaws, but he seemed multifaceted enough. In, you know, he dies, like, you know, 25 minutes in. So I think in the time that we do get to see him, he's fine.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just looking at, I'm looking at a picture of him, and yeah, like, if you put, slap some glasses on him, like, ultimate hipster.
Nerd. Right.
Oh, and, you know, put a scarf on him maybe, I guess, too. But
yeah.
In any case. Yeah, so Tadashi, very sad that he died because he was such a great character, but you know that's how they get you.
It's so,
that's the whole, that's like the father must die, the hot older brother must die,
tragic.
Everyone must die.
I didn't know that was a rule.
Well, the loved family member or friend must die, I guess.
Okay,
if we're gonna expand our rule. I know originally we called it the father must die, but I mean, if you think about it, he kind of is a father figure too. Hiro. I mean, his father's been dead since he was 3, so.
Yeah.
In a way, he kind of is a father figure, I guess. And then Hiro is. Hiro is like. I don't. How old is Hiro supposed to be again? Like.
14.
14? Okay. Yeah. I feel like there's times where he acts much younger, but. I don't know. I guess it works out.
I had the same thought. In some ways, I feel like they tried to kind of overcompensate because he's so smart that he probably maybe lacks some social skills to go along with it, or, like, he would, like, you know, they kind of wanted us to not think that he was super genius guy because, like, he's
right.
Still very approachable,
he's not a perfect
even though
person,
he's,
yeah.
You know, really smart. But on the other hand,
right,
like, I think it's also, we're getting older, Maggie, and I can't remember what it was like to be 14.
We're getting what? Sorry, you kind of started breaking up a little bit.
We're getting older.
I guess. but yeah, I thought Ryan Potter did an amazing job with his voice acting. Like,
he did.
So good. He hasn't really been in too many things. I did watch one of his, like, interviews on YouTube, like, a couple months ago and was like, huh. It's, like, really well-spoken. But, yeah. He's been in, like, I think the... He's been in, like, a bunch of other Disney things, but nothing really huge. And then there's a bunch of other cast members who are, like... I feel like they're kind of... Like, they're kind of well-known, but not really. I feel like TJ Miller is probably, like, the most... Has, like, the most well-known stuff of the bunch. I mean, I guess... who's the guy from Firefly? He plays Alistair Cray. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. It's Alan
Tudyk.
Yes. He plays Cray, who's like a very minor character.
He's done a bajillion things though.
Yeah.
He's like really, he's done a lot of voice acting for Disney. He did voice acting for Wreck-It Ralph. He was in Frozen. He did a little bit in Zootopia. He did the chicken in Moana, which I just saw last weekend, and I really loved it.
He did the chicken. I didn't know. Okay, no spoilers though. But, like, I didn't even know the chicken had a voice. But okay.
No, like, it's great. It's great. I mean, somebody has to do that, the you know, the sounds or whatever.
Oh, my God.
He's great. I love him so much. And, like, I'm so glad that he's, like, kind of found his niche and whatever, because he's so good at this. my little proud mother heart for this guy who's, like, 20 years older than me.
Yeah, so I was looking through, like, the list of actors. So, again, I mentioned how Ryan Potter and Daniel Henney, both multiracial, they play Hiro and Tadashi. Jamie Chung plays Go-Go. I don't really think she's in too many things. I think, let me look at her internet movie database. She's in, like, a bunch of, like, the Hangover movies for some reason. She was in Gotham. She was in she plays Mulan in Once Upon a Time. So that's Go-Go.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah, I know who she is now.
Yeah. Mulan, but, like, she hasn't been in, like, a lot of stuff. Just, she's like, a bunch of, like. Time.
She's great in Once Upon a Time. I ship her with Aurora. No big deal.
So Fred is played by TJ Miller. And he is in also a bunch of animated things. He plays Tough Nut in How to Train Your Dragon. What else? He plays Robbie Valentino in Gravity Falls, and I love that show, and Robbie's ridiculous. What else? Who else does he play? He's in Silicon Valley. I never watched that show. Deadpool.
Oh, I saw Deadpool.
A bunch of random other TV shows. Huh. Yeah, what? Just a bunch of random things.
Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I think, I guess he, I don't know if, this is Cloverfield, but I never watched that, because I'm not really into horror.
I was too scared to watch.
Yeah, I read the synopsis and I was like, I'm good, thanks. Wasabi was voiced by Damon Wayans Jr., and I was like, what? Because Damon Wayans Sr., plays the main character of My Wife and Kids, and I used to watch that, like, a lot when I was a kid.
Oh.
And I was like, first I thought it was him, and I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, it's his son. And then I was like, oh, that makes so much more sense. Because I was like, how is this older man playing a, like, college-age kid? What?
Yeah.
Genesis Rodriguez plays Honey Lemon. I don't know if I know this woman. Looks like her biggest stuff has been, yeah, I think Big Hero 6 is her biggest film. So she was in Identity Theft, Man on a Ledge, and Run All Night. I don't even know what that is. 2015 film, apparently. Maya Rudolph plays Cass, and Maya Rudolph was like the bride in Bridesmaids, right?
Yeah, she's I love her. She's hilarious.
And then I don't know, like, hearing Billy Bush was like a really weird thing that kind of took me out of the film when I heard his voice, and I was like, oh, why? Did you recognize his voice? Because I did, and I was like,
no.
Oh. Yeah, so, you know, the whole scandal, you know, in 2016, yeah, about what he said on the bus, and I was like, yep, yeah, this, wait, 2014 was a different time. 2014 was a different time.
Who does he voice?
Oh, he just played at the very end when they're kind of talking about, oh, who are these new superheroes in San Francisco or whatever. It was just like, he was doing like a newsreel thingy.
Oh, I would never pick up on that. I don't know if I even know what his voice sounds like. Which is probably a good thing. Like, I'm not
probably a good complaining. Thing. Yeah. So, I just wanted to kind of go through the cast list because I feel like these people are not super, super well known. They're like kind of. Well, they're, like, they've been around the industry, but yeah,
they've got their, like, spots of fame.
Yeah,
like, you know.
But sometimes I like that though. Sometimes I don't want a film to be like all, like, you know, A-list superstar actors or something. Sometimes I want different people or unknowns or whatever.
I find that it can be really it really takes me out of a movie when, like, animated films have really well-known voices. The one that comes to mind immediately is Kung Fu Panda. It has a lot of really well-known voices, like, not like voice actors, I guess, but, you know, like Angelina Jolie and Jack Black and, like, you know, people who have very recognizable voices, mm-hmm. who are more so, like, you associate their voice with them, not with, like, the character that they're voicing.
So it gets kind of distracting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's just be real here for a second. Wasabi is my spirit animal.
Oh, yeah. I know. You were saying that after we watched the movie
and everything. I love Wasabi so much.
Would you stop, like, at a red light during a car chase, Melissa?
Yes, I would. You know, I like that he's... And, like, the time when he's, like, they're on, like, the island, and there's the, like, the quarantine sign, and he's just like, am I the only one who's, like, who sees this? Like, yeah. He's good. I like him.
Yeah, I remember, I was trying to find it, but I couldn't, so I don't know if it got buried because it just wasn't, like, an unpopular opinion or whatever, but I do remember reading some article way back in 2014 about how the person who wrote it was, like, not thrilled with how they treated Wasabi, because they were like, oh, they tried so hard to not make him a black stereotype that they, like, I don't know, did the character a disservice. But I couldn't find the article, so I don't know where it is. So it's just kind of buried in oblivion now, I guess.
I guess.
But, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if... Yeah, I mean, he definitely doesn't read, like, a stereotype to me. But, like, for me, as someone who...
No. They were saying that they were trying so hard to avoid him being a black stereotype that they went the complete polar opposite direction, and that somehow that weakened his character. I don't know. Again, I was trying to find the original source article and I couldn't. So
yeah, I just was saying that, like, it doesn't feel like that weakened his character. It just gave him a different direction. That, I mean, I liked it because, like, when I was seeing the movie Inside Out, I relate to the character Fear because that's who I am as a person. So, like, when Wasabi was like, this would be awesome if I wasn't afraid of heights, but unfortunately, I'm afraid of heights. Like, that's me. Like, I don't see myself in a lot of, like, characters in that kind of lens.
Yeah.
Because I am
scared. Yo, remember we were watching Pacific Rim, and I was like, I'm Newton Geisler, and you're Hermann Gottlieb. Guys, yeah. If you haven't listened to our Pacific Rim episodes, listen to our Pacific Rim episodes. We are basically those two characters. Like, basically. Yeah.
Who are you in the Big Hero 6 team, then?
Who am I in the team? I don't know. I don't really feel like I fit really any of the team members, honestly.
Fred?
Like, I was gonna say Fred, but, like, I don't think so, honestly. Like, he's very enthusiastic, which I guess I see in myself, but, like, other than that, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't really think I fit really any of the characters. Maybe the cat. Maybe I'd be the cat.
Mochi.
I'd be Mochi.
I love that cat. I love all cats, actually.
Anyway, so after Tadashi speeds down on his Vespa, who knows what he's driving?
I don't know, motorbike. But he works it.
And then he's like, hey, I'll bring you to your next fight. But let me show you my super amazing, awesome undergraduate laboratory first, because I want to impress you. I know, I had to give it the British pronunciation, laboratory. Let's go to the laboratory first, so I can wow you with, like, how amazing college is before you speed off to do illegal stuff. And so we head off to this San Francisco Institute of Technology. Caltech ripoff. And we're led into this awesome lab that's kind of like Willy Wonka-esque, like how crazy it is.
Yeah.
And I was trying to decipher what I wrote down. I figured it out. I said, what kind of, I meant to say undergraduate lab, but it looks like what kind of UGG lab, and I was like trying to figure out what that meant. What kind of undergraduate lab has, like, this many resources and craziness? I was like, yo, This is, like, what? I guess 2032 is a different time, but, like, but no one gives undergrads that much, like, freedom to do, like, literally whatever.
But we also have to buy that these kids are, like, geniuses, basically.
Yeah, so, yeah. And then, like, they're all handpicked by Callahan and blah, blah, blah. So, like, yeah.
Well, in the scheme of things, it's easier for me to imagine that, like, a college would properly fund geniuses than to believe in the, like, kids could do this, like, that level of genius. So,
I mean... Well, like, both of those things, right? Like, this lab is crazy, and also, how are these kids coming up with this stuff? I mean, props to them.
I'm just gonna go with it.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm realizing, I think Into the Badlands turned me into some kind of cynic where I need to nitpick every, like, single last detail, but, like, it's fun. So,
I mean, it is thanks, fun.
Badlands.
Yeah, basically, but...
But no, I mean, it's like, Willy Wonka-esque, but it was, like, super cool, and, like, I mean, as an audience member, you also buy into it, too. Like, you're also... in that you're experiencing the same wonder that, like, Hiro is experiencing, right? Because this is so, yeah, like, exactly. Amazing and magical and, like, oh my gosh, this is such a cool place. Hiro should totally go here.
Yeah. I like how each of, like, their projects turns into, like, their, like, superpower or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it kind of feeds back into the whole idea of waste not, you know? Like, every moment in this movie is...
Right, yeah. There's no... important. There's no filler in this movie. Everything is important. So I something about, well, first of all, I know I've talked to you about this. I talked about this with you right after we saw the movie the first time. Gogo just looks like an Asian version of Elsa. Like, honestly, her face is almost exactly the same. So I had some issues with that, because it's like you're getting, like, the whole same face thing. And I'm just, like, not about that.
Yeah, people complain about that a lot in, like, Disney movies recently.
Is it a Disney or a Pixar problem that it's, like, the whole same face thing?
Well, this
thing?
Isn't a...
I'm not... It's not Pixar, right?
I would say it's a Disney.
I can never remember, because didn't they get bought out by Disney? But let me check.
You know, yeah, I mean, Pixar is under the...
Oh, I don't think it's not Pixar, no. I think it's just purely Disney.
But this isn't a Pixar movie. And Pixar generally doesn't have the same problem. But also, a lot of their films are non-human, so... it's kind of a non-issue for them anyway.
True. I just remember people have talked about the whole same face issue when it comes to Disney's 3D animated stuff recently, and how, like, there's other animation studios that kind of are, like, very, they embrace, like, the opposite. They have, like, characters that have very different designs, and how they wish they would kind of go in that direction. I want to say it was Studio Laika is the studio that they're referring to. I think they did, like, Paranorman and maybe Hotel Transylvania or something. But let me see. Studio Laika. That's L.
I mean, for me, it's like they found the perfect face. And they're like, we're just going to go with this one. They're like, this is the one that audience is like. You know, like, it has the perfect big eyes and... perfect features. We're just gonna do this one for everything. And, like, I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying that seems like what they're just
doing. I can even expand it to, like, Honey Lemon looks a little bit like Rapunzel. You know, like, I could expand it to that too.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so samey. Let's see. Yes, Laika Entertainment did Coraline, Paranorman, The Box Trolls, Kubo and the Two Strings. I really want to watch Kubo and the Two Strings. I still haven't seen it.
I actually wanted to see that in theaters. Then I remember hearing somebody say that it was, like, sad or something. I was like, I do not want to go and cry at the theater, because that's really not a fun experience.
It looks gorgeous. I just haven't seen it.
I cry at movies. It keeps me away from a lot of sad movies.
I cry at, like, I think I used to be a little bit more, like, selective, but, like, nowadays I'll, like, cry at anything. I was, like, crying during Big Hero 6, and I was like, it's not even that, like... Honestly, in the scale of movies, like, it's not even that. I don't think I cried the first time I watched it that much, so I was
like,
girl.
Let me tell you something. I cried when I saw The Lorax.
Yeah, you told me this.
And it wasn't because it was sad. It was because at the very end, when, like, the problem was solved, it was so happy, I cried. And my God, what the heck is wrong with me? It wasn't, like, it's not a good movie. I mean, like, it's an okay movie, but, like, it's not, like, something to write home about, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
God, why? I didn't used to be like this. The older I get, the more I cry at movies. I don't know. I use it to cope with my sad own existence.
Oh my god. Anyway, moving on. So yeah, I was saying that like the whole Gogo's face looks like Elsa's face and Honeylemon's face looks a little bit like Rapunzel's face was kind of like bothering me because I'm like, same face can be kind of an annoying issue.
But I know that's something of, that like, well, I'm just saying that I know it's something that people complain about and like it's completely valid. That said, I don't notice it.
It's just like you could do so much more and be and have, you know, you have this opportunity to design a new character that looks different and you're just gonna like, I don't know, stick to the same thing.
Yeah.
Kind of uninspired.
Yeah, I mean, that I agree. But it doesn't mean I notice it.
So, speaking of Honeylemon, something, you know the lab scene where she's like, she tips over one of the, like, well, she doesn't tip over, but she pours a beaker full of liquid into their beaker and then it sets off a chain reaction and yeah. And then, you know, the ball turns from black to pink or whatever. I was just thinking, like, this is reminding me of something that I've seen before, but I can't pinpoint what. I feel like this is another Disney scene shout-out, but I can't remember what it is. I don't think it's... Is it Snow White and, like, the potion thing that's reminding me of? Like, I'm just trying to... I mean, God knows that that kind of scene has been done a lot before in any kind of mad scientist contraption thing. I guess maybe Emperor's New Groove, but
yeah, I did think of that. But something about it just really reminded me
of something. Like, I was
Willy
like
Willy Wonka,
yeah.
Personally, but that's not. I mean, nothing compels me to think that it's like similar to anything else.
Yeah, I was just like, something about the composition of this is reminding me of something I've seen before, and can't quite put my finger on it. So I don't know if it was, like, Yzma's lab or something else.
Emperor's New Groove is just such a good movie. that's just a quality movie.
I didn't watch it until, like, a couple of years ago.
I know, I remember, I think I saw it with you the first
time. Yeah, we were watching it in Sarah's house, but yeah that was...
It's such a good movie.
So good.
I did not appreciate it in my youth because I was like, I got to the end and I was like, I don't understand this. But then, like, it's funny when you rewatch it.
Yeah, it's like how Shrek has that rewatch value when you're older and you're like, oh my god, they're saying the like most ridiculous things. So yeah, before we move on to like other scenes, anything you want to talk about with like the lab scenes or anything?
Nope.
And we're both like really tired. But yeah, so we have that lab scene. Then Tadashi's like, okay, fine, I'll drop you off at. Well, he doesn't, right? Because isn't he like, oh wait, no, I gotta like get into this university or something. School. Yeah. So then, like, you know, he spends. We get a great, like, kind of time-lapse montage thing where we're seeing him working in, like...
Well, before that,
we get, like,
he's like, it's time to get a great idea, and he sharpens a pencil, and then he sits down, and he can't think of anything.
Oh, and before that, we meet Baymax. I totally skipped over that.
Oh, yeah.
We meet Baymax, because for some reason, Tadashi has his own little corner office or something, because he's, like, super special.
He is super special.
And, like, he's the only one who, like, I guess Fred doesn't really have a nickname, but, like, everyone else has, like, weird food-based nicknames, so it's a little strange. Yeah. But, so anyway, we step inside Tadashi's little office space, and we get introduced to Baymax, who's, like, super adorable. Thoughts, impressions
engineered
about Baymax?
Engineered to be adorable. Engineered to be adorable.
Engineered to be adorable. Yeah, not threatening. I mean, he says it throughout the movie. He's like, yeah, I think this is interfering with my non-threatening appearance or whatever. And he's so squishy and soft.
Yep.
So, yeah, we meet Baymax. And I guess, like, he doesn't really think too much of it. He's like, okay, cool. Like, I got a lollipop, whatever.
Yeah. But he's impressed. I think, you know, Right. He knows that his, like, older brother is a genius, too, but he doesn't really think about it.
Yeah, because it's, like, normal, because you're, like, he's just your brother, right? And yeah. It's like, oh, I can finally see your, like, work, you know?
I can see your worth.
No, I said work!
I didn't say worth!
You're horrible. That's horrible.
I see why I keep you around.
Oh my God. No, his work with a K, not a T-H.
I know.
God. Anyway, moving on. So yeah, we get the whole thing, the little like, oh, sharpen my pencil. It's going to be epic. And then like, doesn't, no idea what to do. Right.
I think that little scene is very emblematic of the movie itself in that it's very trope aware. It's very bordering on meta a lot of times.
Like, I mean, like, Fred is literally, like...
Yeah.
He's literally giving a spiel about how they're, like, the team against the villain and blah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, this is our origin story. Like, I died at that part. Like, I was like, yes. Because, like, you know... All the viewers, well, maybe not the, like, the little kids, but, you know, all the viewers are trope aware. Mm-hmm. And so, like, having a character who's trope aware is, like, you know, it's thrilling.
I don't know. I guess I'm not really, like, super impressed by that stuff anymore. Everything seems so postmodern nowadays. It's just, like, isn't everyone trope aware now? You know what I mean? Like, well, so many characters are trope aware now.
When I was watching, I was actually thinking similar thoughts to that. Like, it's expected that a movie is... trope aware, you know? Yeah. It has to be a degree of modern or a postmodern, or, you know,
it's 2017 or in that case 2014. Like, we're trope aware by now. We're right, jaded, like, individuals.
I think all the best movies have some kind of awareness of that. You know, and it speaks to our time and whatever, but it's hard to know how a movie speaks to our time until the time passes, and then you can look back and be like, oh.
Yeah, it's like, exactly like that. Anyway, so I know I'm just kind of going through the plot points because I'm a little bit loopy and I think you are too.
What?
But yeah, so he and then Tadashi's like, just kind of start with, well, he's like the whole, and this is kind of reflected throughout the movie, right? Looking at it from a different angle type thing, like, use your brain.
Yeah.
Think smarter, not harder, that kind of a deal.
Like, so. I like it, but I also don't like it.
Yeah.
It feels very, like, cheesy.
It's like it's a little trite. What's the other word?
On the nose.
Platitudes. Yeah. Platitudinous, I guess. Yeah, platitudinous. Yeah.
But on the other hand, I like that that's how that the movie suggests that you solve your problems, is, like, use your brain and think about it. Like, it's definitely a movie that promotes, like, science and, like, stuff like that. And I mean, I'm always team promoting science and math for the children. Yep.
I mean, if we weren't team science, we wouldn't be having a podcast called Sci-Fi in Color. So, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, sci-fi, science.
Yeah, you're right. They're not really mutually exclusive. Anyway, so he's like looking at it from a different angle, and then again, because the storytelling is so tight in this movie, we kind of get back to those, like, what does he call them? Like, those, like, mini bots, those nanobots, whatever.
Yeah.
You're like, I know what you're talking about. I don't know what they're called, but I know what you're talking about.
Nanobots.
And now I want to look it up. Because I feel like nanobots have a different,
connotation.
Yeah. Microbots. Sorry, they're called microbots. Okay, because I knew... Because nano is a little... I feel like we've seen that enough
nano
in movies,
like,
where it's,
too,
like...
too small.
Like, too small, and also kind of... You get kind of an air of, like... at least a connotation of, like, evil or kind of, like, underhandedness to me. I feel like that's how... That's, like, what I get with, like, nanobots, because, like, people... Because they're so small, they can be used for, like, insidious things. But anyway,
I don't get a nano bad connotation, but you know, whatever.
In any case, you're right. I think it's more of a size thing, right? Like, nanobots can, like, be in, like, a bloodstream or something like that. But anyway, so the microbots, he's looking at the one that he kind of used, like, a larger version of that for in the first bot battle that we see.
Right.
And then so he's kind of able to adapt it to smaller
Everything is important.
Yep. It's the power of Disney storytelling. Everything's important. So he goes, that's going to be his project to get into, to I guess win Callahan's favor and get into the college and be accepted or whatever. So he brings that to the showcase and, you know, he's like a nervous little kid, but he has his friends and fam backing him up. So he does his presentation and I was like, wow, this kid is like way too smooth. Like, where did the spotlight come from? How was he able to set up this whole thing where he's like literally like, you know, like, The microbots are kind of, I know it's like, oh, it's controlled by his mind and whatever, but it's like everything went so smoothly during that presentation. I was like, unless he like knew the space layout and everything, like literally how. But whatever, we'll suspend our disbelief because he's a genius, charismatic little kid.
Whatever. I kept thinking about that, like, how far in advance do you have to think plan of things, and like, do you ever like basically think too quickly? So, like, and it, like, it doesn't work because, like,
the microbots.
Yeah, or, like, basically, you think 1, 2, 3, and then the microbots go 1, 3, and they miss 2, and you fall because you skip a step. I have no idea. Like, I was
I didn't think about it that way, but that's true, too. That's valid. Yeah, I mean, again, I think the hand waved it away as, like, technology and future, and it's magic. Yay!
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. But I was more like, wow, this presentation seems, like, way too smooth. Like, how is there a spotlight on this kid? What is this, a TED Talk or something? Like,
it's just, like... You care about lighting a lot.
I do care about lighting a lot. This is true. But no, like, literally the spotlight on him. And it's like, okay, where does this come from? I mean, it's Disney. They can be dramatic and whatever. Like, God knows in Tangled, there's, like, that scene where Gothel's, like, singing her Broadway number and there's a spotlight on her. It's not like there's anyone else in that tower, you know what I mean? Like, doing spotlights. So, like, I know.
Of course there's someone else in that tower. There's Billy, who controls the spotlight.
I know, like, suspension of disbelief, whatever. But yeah, I was like, how does he know the auditorium layout and everything? But whatever. So he gets his, like, kind of moment to shine, and then, of course, it's two, you know, older white dudes fighting over his intellectual property, because obviously this is where that would go. And, you know, it's, like, just skeevy, because, like, this is, like, a 14-year-old, right? Yeah. And they're, like, fighting over his creation, and,
well,
like,
I mean,
making him choose.
Technically, yes. And in hindsight, more so. But, like, on first watch, Callahan doesn't seem that, like, nefarious. He's more like, let's develop it. You know?
Right, push
it to the limit. Like, not sell it all.
But what I didn't like was, and obviously this is coming from watching the movie a second time where I already knew how everything was going to turn out, but I guess I just didn't like how Callahan was immediately like, don't trust this man, he's awful and evil and blah. Like, the least you could do is kind of, like, give some proof or explanation instead of just, like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I just feel like he just was taking agency away from Hero instead of letting Hero make an informed decision. He was like, no, listen to me, because this guy's awful. I mean, admittedly, we understand that's because he has a lot of, you know, he's very upset about his... the presumed death of his daughter and everything.
Yeah.
Sure. But it's like, you're like, the way you're talking to this 14-year-old is not super great right now. I mean, Cray is a jerk too, but, you know.
They're all jerks.
He's a piece of work, is what I'm going for than a jerk, but
okay,
yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
He's a piece of work. And he has, like, the obvious, like, evil villain nose thing going on. So it's almost like, oh, it's, like, too obvious that they're trying to make him the villain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
He's a red herring.
He is a red herring. So then, you know, we get the whole scene. And Tadashi's kind of off to the side. And I feel like, does he interject? Not really, right? He kind of, like, lets them
state. He kind of lets it play out.
Yeah, he lets them state their case. And then I think later he talks. Does he talk to Hero about, like, what they should decide? Oh, because I think he says something about, like, you know, the money's a lot or something, but...
I don't think they really get into it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that he might have done it in the future, but we can't know that.
Right, right. I think when Cray mentioned his offer, Tadashi was like, oh, wow, this is, like, a huge amount. But then, you know, yeah, he kind of just did let it play out.
And well, then what? That's good, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's letting, like,
Hero make his decision.
Him do the decision making.
And then what do they talk about by the bridge again? See, I watched it yesterday and I already forgot what they were talking about.
Let me tell you something.
You don't remember either and you just watched it?
I watched it like an hour or two ago and I honestly couldn't tell you.
See, that's not what I mean. Like, this movie is not memorable. I forget large swaths. I feel like the graphics and the character of Baymax is very iconic. And like, I remember the main plot points, but like all the other stuff that's just like super forgettable. Like, I want to say that scene by the bridge was somewhat important, but I honestly don't remember anything that happens in that scene. And I literally just watched it yesterday. You watched it an hour ago and you already forgot what happened in that scene. And you've seen it 10 times. Like, it's just something about this film that it has this moment where it's just like super like like really like not memorable. Not that it's bad, it's just not memorable, you know?
I would say that like when it falls back more on plot stuff than on like anything else, then that's where it really kind of has its struggles. Once it like when you got like the character scenes, when you've got like the scenes where you know, montages or whatever, I find it, you know, more entertaining than the plot, which is kind of basic.
And then so I don't neither of us remember what happened on that bridge scene, but in any case, at some point they go back to the building that the exhibitions are in and there's a fire and this person runs out and says Professor Callahan's still in there and Didashi needs to leap in and save his mentor or whatever, even though Hiro's like, don't run back into that burning building, but right. Then Didashi's like, oh, I gotta help. So he runs back, and then the building promptly explodes because life is awful and not fair. And then we get
it's like sad and like when the first time I watched it, I did not know that was gonna happen. I mean, like, obviously, like, once a fire, I was like, this is not gonna end well, but
you know, for 2032, there was a surprising lack of fire safety and sprinklers and etc. in that building. I mean, you would think, unless it was like tampered. I mean, we never really get an answer about who did that, right? Like, maybe Cray did it, but we don't know.
What, right? The fire?
Yeah. If the fire was deliberate or accidental. I thought the
fire was deliberate from Callahan.
Why do you say that? Wouldn't he have left the bill? Oh, you mean like he faked his death type of deal?
I guess.
I don't know if it was... Was it confirmed, though? I feel like it wasn't confirmed.
No, that was my suspicions. But I guess it doesn't... I guess it could have just been an accident. But it just felt... I guess it felt like Callahan's actions were too well planned and coordinated for someone who just did it on the spur of the moment.
Because I was going to say, why would he risk his own life by staying in there and trying to, you know, survive the fire with the microbots? But then I thought, well, he was trying to fake his own death, I guess. But then it's like, well, that's kind of weak.
It doesn't really add up that great. No.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was an accident, I don't know.
Because you would think that if he had planned it out, that he wouldn't, like, have left the building at least, you know?
Yeah.
It's a little bit tricky because you're like, well, how would he get the microbots? And actually, even that doesn't make any sense, right? Like, you're telling me that, like, the building burned down, no one went in to look for anything, and, you know, he just managed to get past all the firefighters and etc. Like, what are you talking about? So that doesn't make any sense. But
I mean, I guess
whatevs.
You could do a play-by-play of, like, where the fire starts, he can't get out, he grabs the microbots, makes, like, a protective circle around himself with them, survives the fire, but nobody notices, and then afterwards he leaves, I guess. But...
I mean, is there even... What's the point of him even, like, being off the grid? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like he couldn't have enacted his, plan. His evil, super-duper evil plan. Like, he could still have done that and still have been alive. Or, you know, perceived by other people as being alive. The only thing it does is for the viewer to give us this tension of, like, oh, Tadashi died because he's trying to save the sky, and... Sky is also dead, but not, like, he actually is kind of indirectly responsible, so it's like, eh.
Yeah.
It doesn't really work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of played for drama. I don't know if it works logically, though.
Eh.
Yeah. Anyway, so we get to that funeral scene, which I thought was very, I thought it was well done. Like, I liked the way it was shot and, like, the framing of everything.
Yeah,
it's a placement.
I love,
like, seeing Hiro on that staircase.
Like, when they come in through the window and you've got, like, the people talking, like, in kind of in shadow, and you come in, you see the friends, and you go up and you see the staircase, and him on the top of the staircase. It's really, really
seeing him on the staircase is just, oh, it was just really good. Pain. And, like, the lighting was just, like, this just, like, sorrowful kind of, like, light blue lighting. It's just, oh, it's good stuff. And I really liked how they had, like, the incense sticks for, like, Tadashi and, like, and I guess Callahan too. Again, just integrating that culture into the scenes. I wrote a thing about Baymax. So, you know, I'm like, I don't know how much time has passed from his death to, like, you know, the day Baymax comes back, I guess. It's just, it's left pretty ambiguous. But I don't know how long it's been, but part of me was thinking, well, it seems kind of like it's been a decent chunk of time, and Hiro hasn't hurt himself once. Like, that's convenient, I guess.
I don't know. To me, it could be.
But who knows how long it was.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he seems to keep his room relatively clean, so it's not like he's tripping on stuff.
Yeah, like you think, like, a paper cut or something, or stubbing your toe. And so then, you know, he says, ow, and then Baymax reappears. And even Baymax is like, oh, where's Tadashi? And I know that doesn't come until, like, later, but, like, yo.
That is so sad.
Oh my gosh.
Tragic.
Yeah. So then Baymax is like, does his little... I mean, he's just, like, you know, he's a clueless robot at this point, so he has no idea.
Yeah.
Well, he's just, like, a socially awkward, like, it's, like, slapsticky fun at the beginning, right? Because, like, Hiro is, like, still grieving. And Baymax is just, like, is, like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not obtuse, but something like that.
Yeah, oblivious.
Like, clueless robot self who's like, oh, you're, like, dealing with, like, hormones and puberty.
Yeah,
and
puberty. Yeah.
You're also dealing with what looks like it could be grief. And it's like, okay, Baymax.
Yeah. We gotta boost up your empathy.
He's so well-meaning, but at the same time, so clueless. So, he's like, oh, well, he sees the microbot, right? And he's like, will helping you find out where the microbot wants to go help you feel better? And Hiro's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then he just bounces, and then we get the whole, you know, the classic Disney chase scene thing. I feel like they do that a lot in Disney, where it's like, oh, character B is like, oh, wait, time to leave. And then character A is like, wait, no, I gotta get you back home. So they go on a little adventure to an empty warehouse. It's full of it's full of microbots that are being manufactured.
Manufactured.
And a creepy dude in a kabuki mask.
Do love that kabuki mask.
I love that kabuki mask? Was that a question or a statement?
No, it was a statement. You know I do. Well, I mean, you don't, but I know I do. Whatever.
Well, to me, it reminded me of Amon from Legend of Korra.
That's true. I'll give you a
point. I want to say Legend of Korra, the first season came out before Big Hero 6. Let's see.
Yes, I would say that is correct.
Oh, right, because I remember you got me into Avatar, The Last Airbender, at the end of freshman year, and then I think it picked up beginning of sophomore year.
That sounds right, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. It was released in... Oh, no, this is the soundtrack. I don't know why... Where's the...
I would say 2012 itself? Or 13, but
yeah, it came out April 14, 2012, I think, is cool. The original release. So, yeah, I was just like, oh, this is just, like, this dude looks just like Amon. Because he's wearing the same thing. He has a mask with red on it, or the red and white mask, and he has, like, the black pea coat, trench coat type thing. And I was like, oh, it's Amon.
Or it could be a woman.
Oh, my God. Don't even. You know what's funny? Someone pointed this out, and I did kind of snicker and think about it when I saw him, the Kabuki Mask character. It could be Krey, because Krey's nose is too big and wouldn't fit in the mask.
That's sad.
Which is terrible, but also true. So I just kept thinking this dude looks just like Amon from Legend of Korra. So I will link to him in the show notes too. I keep saying this and I keep not writing it down. So Melissa, I hope that you are going to get this in the notes later. But yeah, he looks just like Amon from Legend of Korra. And then so they have to escape. I don't know, somehow like, again, I'm trying to think logically. Okay, he's attacking them.
Yes.
But, you know, they have, like the wall of microbots, like, after them throughout the whole time. But I just feel like, I don't know, maybe it would have been better if he just laid low instead of just, like, storming out there. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It wouldn't be fun for the plot or the story. But there's no reason for him to reveal himself.
Right, but, you know, Hiro was curious, and he wanted to go back and, like, you know, explore, and, I guess Callahan deemed it a threat, because somebody now knew that these things were being created.
Yeah.
And, in fact, it was the creator of them in the first place, which is not a good position to be in. But no one took him seriously, so it really wasn't a big deal for Callahan, though maybe he didn't realize it at the time. That's where, like, he goes from, like, sympathetic character to, like, douche nugget.
Like I said,
that's
kids,
my nickname for my dog.
Like I said, don't let old white men steal your intellectual property. This is what happens when you let that happen.
Technically, he didn't let it happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was forcibly taken from him.
Hence, stolen.
Stolen intellectual property. Hashtag stolen intellectual property. The story of Big Hero 6. They run out of the warehouse. They get back home or whatever. I think they stop by the police station first. And that's... I found the whole gag with the tape to be a little bit too, like...
long?
It was too much. It was just like I know, it's just like, it's like the juvenile humor stuff that, like, all these movies have to have, yet I just don't care for it because I'm older now, you know. Like the whole with Baymax being made out of vinyl, and he has to deflate to get into the warehouse, and he makes like that, like, squeaking, farting noise when he's deflating, and it's like, oh no. and then think of the tape. I mean, I did start laughing because it was like an overly long gag that, like, because it's overly long, that's why you start laughing. But, like,
yeah,
yo.
I mean, yes, but, like, I also enjoy those kinds of things. It appeals to our inner child. I do think that tape thing was a little too long. Like, it has three, like, he has three holes, and then the other side has three. And so I was like, if it was only two,
I feel it like kind of worked for me, though, because I was so, like, not about that. But because it was an overly long gag, I started laughing because it was just too long, and it was sustaining it was making it funny rather than anything else. I wasn't too impressed, but it did get me in the end.
Yeah.
But I was just like, And then so Baymax is there to kind of support what Hiro's saying, except he starts losing his charge and starts acting like a drunk human being.
Or when I don't get enough sleep. That's also how I act.
So, I don't know. Someone pointed out, and I say someone because I don't know who said this because it was like on a forum or something. But someone pointed out that's not really how electronics work when they're, you know, losing charge or losing battery. So, like, Tadashi must have programmed him to act like that. Which I was just like, that's pretty funny.
That actually adds a nice layer to it. Because, I mean, obviously it doesn't really make that much sense. Because, like, electronics sometimes do act a little weird when they're low in battery. But
right.
that's a little weird.
It was weird even for like a some kind of like AI losing charge or something. It was a little extreme.
Yeah, but like it worked so well.
Hairy baby.
it's so good. That's.
But yeah, I guess it's also that air of like not being threatening, right? Because that's right. Baymax's whole deal. So I guess there are ways for a robot to shut down that would be very terrifying. And having him act like a drunk person is, like, probably a little bit of a better option than those other options.
I guess, yeah.
Once Hiro really started going into his, like, I must seek vengeance and, you know, build all these super powerful tools and train you mode, I was just like, this kid is basically Iron Man. Like, is he not Iron Man?
Like, I mean,
he's essentially Kid Iron Man.
Kid Iron Man. Yeah, that's fair. I mean,
he's like a little mini Tony Stark.
Yeah. Or he's using his grief to funnel an obsession.
Sure.
But why not both?
But I think he's like, he's very, like, just the way he, like, uses tech. And just, like, there's some specific scenes that were very Iron Man to me. Like, like this comes in later, but, like, when Baymax is blasting around on those,
Yeah.
Like, that was basically, like, the first Iron Man movie. When Stark is trying to, control those, like, blasters. And he's just, like, going all around the garage and, like, somehow managing to hit, you know, not hit anything, but, you know, And then just, there's, like, other parts of it, too, like, designing that mask, and then, what else? Oh, yeah, just, like, the way he interfaced with, like, those, with the technology around him, it just really reminded me of Iron Man, at least the first movie.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Big Hero 6 did come from, you know, comics.
Yeah, and remind me, it was just after or before they got Marvel? After, right? Because Stan Lee technically makes an appearance in this.
Yeah, it's decidedly after.
Yeah. So, I mean, it does have that Marvel kind of influence to it. Yeah, I want to say Big Hero 6 is Marvel, right? It is a Marvel property. Like, the original comic books, I want to say.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. It has to be after.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think they could just do that. Yeah, Marvel comic characters. Also, I love that mural in the garage. It's like, so after Hiro kind of programs all those fight moves into that chip, what did you do?
I just, something fell off my desk.
Okay. I just saw the look on your face and I was like, what? But yeah, after Hiro programs a chip with, like, fighting moves onto it and, like, sticks it in Baymax's memory slot or whatever, you know, like, he does all these, like, he busts out all these, like, crazy karate moves in front of this, like, amazing, like, mural that's just happens to be painted on the back of Hiro's garage door. And I was like, oh, it's so beautiful and so good. But I was like, that mural is beautiful. And it's, I don't know who did it, because I don't know if we know for a fact that Hiro or Tadashi are, like, artists, but...
It doesn't
feel that way. Oh, maybe Aunt Cass. That would make sense, right?
Yeah,
that makes sense. But it was just a beautiful... Yeah. It was just a nice mural.
There's a piece of my personality that's Aunt Cass, too. Let's just be real here.
The mom? She's not really a mom, she's an aunt, but...
Yeah, like...
Kind of high-strung. I'm like, yeah, I want the best for you guys, but, you know...
More like her when she stress eats.
Yeah, the stress eating. Yeah,
it's like, I feel this. Mm-hmm. She just grabs the food.
Dang, I cannot read my handwriting at all.
Struggle so.
Oh no, I got it. I got it now. Took me a while. Once Baymax has all those fight moves programmed into him, you know, somehow Hiro feels like he's ready to take on the world. Catch the bad guy by himself, because obviously. So
14-year-old boy.
So they go off to look for I want to call him Amon, but I know that's not his name. And then technically the mask figure has a name that's not Callahan, but I don't know what it is. I think it's more of a name for the animators rather than like the audience. I Kabuki. Think they call him No, his name's not Kabuki. It's not. He had the he has a nickname before he's, you know, revealed to be Callahan. I just can't. Where's the name?
So Hiro goes back to the warehouse.
Yokai. Yokai is technically his name that he never gets in the movie, but whatever. So he's like, yep, gonna get Yokai. So they head down to the docks, where they see him rising out of the water like some crazy, like, dock octopus type guy.
That's nice.
Speaking of the crazy, I skipped over this, but when they're in the warehouse and we look over to the wall of crazy, you know, with all the strings and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, like, bruh. Callahan, what are you doing? Like, don't go full super villain. Don't ever go full super villain.
Yeah.
I was just like,
I mean, that's like a classic thing that people do, you know, TV, film, but I always associate it with heroes, with Mohinder. I don't know why.
Wait, Mohinder did that?
I'm pretty sure he did, yeah. Mohinder's father? In relation with Sylar. It's been too long. But but I always think of heroes. Anyway. But, like, anyway. You know, I tried to look back and I didn't, like, if there were things on that board that hinted at things. And presumably there are, but it's just too small to read.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that stuck out to me was the bird logo, which we see later on. Because that's the, I guess that's Kray's logo or something. Sorry, I know I'm taking, like, so many pauses in this episode and just looking at my notes and there's not that much flow.
The thing is,
but
the question for me that I had, actually for the first time watching this this movie, is if that bird logo is the logo of, like, this famous corporation...
Right, how does no one know what it is?
Everyone know it?
But maybe it's not. Maybe it was just a specific logo for that mission or that particular project.
I guess, but, like,
you... But that's, that's also not really...
It also looks compelling. Like the Hunger Games, like...
Mockingjay whatever. Or something, yeah.
Yeah. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, and I feel like it would have been... It would have been, I don't know, it could have been a more compelling logo that made... It was a little bit more, I guess...
fancy.
Related. Not fancy, but related or to the portal or the characters or something.
Yeah, I think that would have made more sense, personally.
But anyway, so Yokai goes, like, full Doc Ock and is, like, rising out of the sea like a crazy person and, I guess, throwing freighters at children and young adults. So that's not great. He's literally trying to kill a student. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah, these aren't just, like, random people who happen to oversee the plan. He knows them. Yeah, he taught them for years, presumably.
So it's like, dang, like, you cold, man.
That's cold, man.
That's
like,
horrible.
I get that he's, like, grief-stricken and whatever, but, like...
Dude, your students.
You know...
Yeah, it's not a good look.
It's really not. Like, I know... It kind of reminds me of, like, when people, like, defend, like, their supervillain crushes. And like, well, it's because of this and this. And like, yeah, but, like, still.
We talked about this. I mentioned this trope before. Draco in leather pants. Or, like, boobification. But, anyway.
I think Brooklyn 99 has a quote about that. Where it's like, cool motivation, still murder. Something like that.
So, yeah, I mean, because Baymax alerted Tadashi's friends about Hiro and, you know, him needing emotional support, they drive down to the docks because I guess somehow they know that they're there. Like, maybe Baymax is like a GPS system that we don't know about. But in any case, they drive down to the docks and they find him. But this is a bad time because they're about to get crushed by a freighter launched at them by a supervillain.
Nice.
Baymax is able to save them. They go and they have a like car chase throughout the city. And I was like, for a, you know, an urban populated American city, there seem to be no cars whatsoever driving. Yeah. And I was like, that seems convenient. So that was kind of ridiculous.
Could be in the middle of the night, but...
But even in the middle of the night, it's a large city. It's not having no one on the streets.
I mean, this is a Disney movie. They can't have, like,
I know,
too much violence. They can't, like, accidentally run over
They can't somebody. Have them be crashing into cars and dying. Yeah. I know. And then we get the classic, we must, for some reason, insert a pop song in the middle of our Disney film, Kay Thanks, bye. But I don't know, it worked for me.
It worked. I actually really like this song. Immortals by Fall Out Boy. Like, this was my jam.
No, it's a decent song. I always get so taken out of these things where it's like just so clearly a pop song coming from the middle of nowhere. You know what I mean? Like, if I feel like it was more integrated if a song was more integrated into the movie, then it would be fine, but it wasn't. So I was just like, it's just kind of just like, once we're, like, in the scene and the montage is fine, but it's, like, it's just kind of jarring getting into it.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I felt the same way about Wreck-It Ralph. Like, we just get that Rihanna song out of nowhere, and it's like, why? But.
What Rihanna song?
Rihanna. You know when, like, they're driving around that, like, pool of lava, and it's, like, Shut Up and Drive?
Oh.
In Wreck-It Ralph?
I guess it didn't stand out for me.
Yeah. Again, I was just, in my head, I was making a lot of connections to different films I'd seen before, so when Baymax and Hiro are flying over the water, or the bay, it just reminded me of, like, How to Train Your Dragon, I guess.
You de bay.
Thank you. You're adorable. But no, I mean, it reminded me of How to Train Your Dragon, you know? Yeah. I haven't seen the first one, but I've seen the second one, and when they're flying over the water, it's like, oh, this is very similar to that.
Really good.
Wondering about, you know, federal airspace, but meh.
Don't
whatever.
Be a bore, Maggie.
Also, like, Hiro breaks the laws all the time. He doesn't care.
He does not give one crapiola.
So I forgot to mention this, but Fred and his, like, unexpected backstory of being a rich kid with a butler, but he's also in, like, erudite stoner. And it's like, oh, yeah. Okay. It all kind of makes sense.
So beautiful. Because it's like, very, very unexpected.
But also not.
But, like, exactly. Also not, like, when he goes to, like, his mansion and, like, he has the butler. And, like, you're just like, what the heck is going on? And then you're like, oh. And then it's like, oh.
I understand now. The mansion was pretty cool, and I love that, like, that kind of sick. Weird bonding moment they were having when they were, like, training and whatever. Oh, so I didn't notice this, but I read this in, like you know, one of the trivia sections of Internet Movie Database or TV Tropes or something, but the statue that Baymax destroys, or was it, Was it Gogo who destroyed the statue in the backyard? No, Baymax, right? Because he's blasting around.
I think so.
Yeah. The statue that's destroyed is a statue of Hans from Frozen.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't notice it because, like, they don't really make that big of a deal of it. But apparently yeah. It's Hans. So then we get this, then we get to the more, I guess, in a way this movie's a bit sci-fi, right? Because we have these genius kids making these crazy contraptions that could possibly exist. But then I think, to me, the most sci-fi part of this movie was the portals.
Yeah, no, that's definitely sci-fi too.
Yeah. But the most sci-fi part.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like I can suspend my disbelief and imagine kid genius inventors, you know, doing their thing. But, like, portals, that go to another weird world, but you know, they're using it for more practical purposes of like transporting things, but like that weird purpley cloudy kind of world that's in between was like really intriguing.
It was, yeah. And you know, there are a lot of questions that are raised about like, well, the matter goes in and it comes out, how does that work, science questions, but you know, they're not gonna actually answer those. But
no, it's a children's film, and that's reasons. Not the main focus of the story too.
Also, it's impossible.
Impossible, sorry.
Nice.
Anyway,
I mean, it's not like we ask Star Trek to justify, you know, their trans—
oh no, not at all. This is soft science fiction, we don't need explanations. But yeah, so the portals I found really intriguing. We finally get the backstory about, like, oh, you know, Callahan hates Cray because he blames him for his daughter's death because she died in the portal. And yeah, Cray is a humongous piece of... Because, you know, he's just like, oh, I gotta impress this general. Gotta send our... astronaut? I feel like it's the wrong word. Gotta send our test subject through, and yeah. Even though, you know, the readings are off, right?
Yeah.
Are you texting someone right now? What are you doing?
No, I'm listening. I'm cool. I'm
not your bae. You're texting during our podcast.
No, I'm playing my turn in Sea Battle. It's completely different.
You're playing your turn in what?
Sea Battle. You don't understand.
Sea Battle?
You don't have an iPhone, do you?
No, I don't.
You wouldn't understand.
Oh, God.
You can play games, like, on iMessage. It's like a battleship.
Anyway.
It's extremely fun.
Okay.
Anyway. I mean, yes, he is an enormous craphead for going through with it. But at the same time, like, this has presumably had, like, a lot of testing, and he's confident in it, and I don't know, I guess on this rewatch, I didn't feel like he made, I mean, like, obviously he shouldn't have done it, and, like, if it was me, like, I wouldn't have done it, but, like, I can see better where he's coming from.
Right. Right. So, we get the backstory behind the portals, and then, I wrote in my notes dinosaur game, and I know exactly what I'm referring to, but I don't know what in the movie I'm connecting that to. You ever play that game, it's like kind of like, dang, I don't know what it's called. This is so bad, because there's this game, that was dinosaur themed that I used to play, like, every day when I was 8. And I just can't remember what the title of it. I want to say, if I Google it, I'll find it. But anyway, go. I mean, speak about things while I'm looking games, this up.
So I doubt I would know what you're talking about. But they go and they have their showdown with Callahan, and they do a pretty
horrible job.
Mediocre job. But I mean, it gives each of them a chance for character development. Certainly. But, you know, it does give them a chance to improve and whatever. And you do set that up for the climax of the film where Hiro basically, you know, he orders Baymax to kill Callahan. It's It's kind of dark.
Yeah, which is really freaking dark. Like, oh my god.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah. And something about this movie just made, like, the plot and the lines just, like, for the most part, like, just something about the forgettableness that kind of, it's just, like, almost, like, plot details and line just, like, kind of slide over me and I forget the smaller details. But someone pointed out that he doesn't say, like, you know, kill Callahan or anything or end him. He says, like, destroy him.
Yeah.
Like, that's really, really dark.
Yeah, it is. It's, and, like, everyone, like, that he's with, like, the whole team, like, it's like, ooh, we crossed a line here.
I mean, because they understand that he's grieving and going through a lot, but, you know, that still doesn't justify
murder.
You know, killing a person. And, yeah, they said this is not what we signed up for. We're here to support you, not to, you know, destroy another human being. Yeah. You know, apprehend him, maybe, but destroy, nah.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't feel like they handled it that great either.
You mean, like, how they were trying to... How do you mean? Because they were trying to stop Baymax, right?
Yeah, they were trying to stop Baymax, but, like, it felt like Hero was... I mean, I guess, you know, Baymax is powerful, so, like, whatever, but it felt like somebody should have been like, you know, Hero, this is a crappy idea. Like...
Well, weren't they kind of trying to say that to him, and he was like, no!
I mean, they were trying to explain it, but I don't know. I don't think they did a very good job.
Mm. So I looked up what the dinosaur game is called. It's called Dinomite. It's like one of those puzzle games where you sling. So these like rows of eggs or dinosaur eggs are coming down at you, and there are different colors. And if you shoot a yellow egg at a yellow section, all the yellow ones disappear. Right, that kind of a game.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I know that format's been copied by a lot of different games. Something about that game reminded me of something that was going on during, like, the first group fight scene. I don't know what it was. Was someone getting slingshotted around or something? Like,
I honestly could not say. Like, what?
Anyway, that was the connection my brain made, but I don't remember what I saw in the movie that connected. Again, something about this, and I don't think I was particularly tired when I watched this movie, so I don't know why I'm not remembering anything. But anyway, yeah, dinosaur game. I don't know what I was connecting it to, but if you haven't played Dinomite, you should play it, because it's a fun game, and I will link to it in the show notes. So I'll send you that link, because I don't think you're going to be able to find it, Melissa. But yeah, so Callahan escapes because the rest of the team stops Hero from killing him, and then, you know, he strands a team there and gets back to his house and is distraught. And then, you know, Baymax is still saying, like, Tadashi is here. And Hero's getting kind of frustrated because he's like, he's not physically here. Like, stop saying that. But then we get this really nice montage where we see, like, we get, like, a little bit of a clip show where we see Tadashi and his multiple trials of trying to get Baymax to work properly. And it's just like, oh, heartstrings. And he's adorable. And, you know.
Yeah. It kind of humanizes Tadashi for...
Because we finally get to see him not as, like, that perfect older brother.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, he makes him feel more real.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just, it's really good. And before I forget, I should just say, I love how the movie, it overlaps, you know, like, the adventure with finding, like, resolution with his grief. So, like, it makes sense that Baymax would be helping him because it's helping him grieve, but it's also helping him, like, do awesome stuff, too.
Well, that's, like, Baymax's,
I'm just saying,
like reason for doing everything that he's doing is he's trying to make his patient feel better, and part of that is, like, you know, addressing his grief and making him feel better, like, literally.
Yeah, it's just a really good setup, I mean, like...
Yeah.
Because it overlaps, like, everything.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a very tight, cohesive story. It's just, for some reason, just not particularly memorable to me. Aside from, like, certain plot points and things.
I love wasabi.
Do you like eating wasabi?
I spilled wasabi on my shirt one time. I love that line.
Do you like wasabi, like, the food in real life? Like, can you eat it?
I can eat it, but in small doses.
Yeah, like, I personally refuse to eat wasabi. It's just, like, it's too spicy and gross. Like, I don't, it doesn't taste like anything. It just tastes like, you know, you're getting water for your nose. Burns.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you have a little bit, like, I like that. Or sometimes, like, when I'm bored, well, not, like, bored, but, like, I'll have, like, sushi or something, and I'll just be, like, sitting at the table and talking, and I'll just kind of mindlessly, like, start nibbling on, like, little, like, bits of wasabi. And, okay. Like, that's kind of fun.
All right, Melissa. Whatever floats your boat. Oh, I totally skipped over this, but I thought it was super cute how, when Hiro and Baymax are kind of flying around, and they land on the bridge, and they're just sitting and kind of talking and connecting. Like, it was so cute to me when Baymax starts, like, moving his feet, like, Hiro's moving his feet. Like, that was so adorable.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to get that out there.
I mean, yeah, you're right. You were totally right.
I mean, and
that whole thing is beautiful. Like, the whole, like flyovers.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, and again, I don't want to get too much into it because it's getting kind of late and ain't nobody got time for that. But, you know, people have talked about, like, the further thing.
Than the film itself. So continue.
Well, I need to go to sleep, and I probably should shower before I go to sleep because I gotta go to work and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so the whole foot twiddling thing or, like, moving your feet thing was just, like, people have kind of gone into, like, the deeper significance of it. Like, oh, like, he's a robot who is, like learning from mimicking humans. And, you know, that's, like, kind of, like, showing empathy and, like, a way to connect to its patients and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then also just, like, the whole... The classic, like, fist bump, like, so good. I that was such an iconic thing in the trailers. I almost forgot. I can't believe that I forgot that that was a thing. You know, that was like a, I don't know, they go back to that a lot in the film. And then that was a big thing in the trailers that people were kind of, like, laughing about. So I wrote down, is that Billy Bush? And I was right. It was Billy Bush, and we talked about him earlier in the episode. I love the credit sequence. Like, the art is so beautiful. So, I don't know. That's, like, pretty much all my notes for Big Hero 6. I have some more notes about... I guess I'm in my head, I have some more kind of notes and topics and whatever. Like, again, just, like, kind of going into the Japanese-inspired world where, like... I guess, like, Wasabi's pants for... Not his regular pants when he's in the lab in the beginning, but, like... In his, like, I guess, superhero costume, he has these, like, loose, like, almost they kind of remind me of samurai pants thing going on. But, yeah, I don't know if I have any really other things to say about Big Hero 6. It's just one of those things where I felt like Baymax as, like, an icon or, like, a toy or a plushie or whatever was very popular everywhere. I mean, especially when I was in China in 2015... Like, not even a year later. I just remember seeing Baymax, like, everywhere, which is kind of wild. But I don't know. I just feel like for this movie, like, the iconography kind of was stronger than, like, the movie itself. Like, people rewatch Big Hero 6, but, like, I don't know if people are really, like, stuck on the story like they are with, like, other Disney films. Does that make sense? You know? But maybe that's not fair of me.
I mean, I think it's a really strong film. Is the plot, like, the strong...
It's a pretty standard plot as a thing.
Well, the thing is that this... If most of the movie focused on the plot, and the plot was weak, the movie wouldn't work. But the reason the movie works is because it doesn't really focus on the plot. The plot is a secondary issue. That's why it works for me, because most of it is focused on, like, him grieving and, you know, his relationships with people around him and you know, stuff like that. And so, like, that's why it works for me.
Yeah. I feel like the strongest parts of this movie were just, like, the environment and the world that it was in, and, like, us, like,
very good.
Just, like, the design of, like, Baymax's design is so iconic. So I think it was more, like, the world that was really intriguing. Because I just felt... I don't know. Like, I thought the voice acting was good. I don't think it's a bad movie. It just... Something about... It just needs, like, a little more oomph somehow.
Well, I guess for me, the characters, like, the secondary characters, like, on the team, they could all use more screen time. They could all use more development.
Yeah.
They what they could really benefit from would be a sequel.
Yeah.
Honestly. Because I feel like the characters are there. Like, I feel like the foundations are there for all of them. It's just they don't get, like, enough time to shine, basically.
Because it's very hero-centric. But even with Hero, I wish I knew, I got to know him more than just, like, smart kid who's grieving for his brother, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they try and pack so much in this. Yeah. And you know, it mostly works, but you can't go in depth on any of the issues. You can't go in depth on, like, any of the secondary characters. I mean, they hint at things, like, even, like, Aunt Cass, like, you know, like, she's, you know, never had kids of her own, but has to raise, you know, her two nephews. Like, mm-hmm. we already kind of can see where this is going. This is not, right. I mean, but, you know, it's ever explicitly told. But, like, yeah, all of them could have used more screen time, more development, but from what we got, I was
satisfied. Tadashi! Why'd we have to lose Tadashi?
Yeah.
I know why, but, you know.
That's literally the whole story. Like, his story would not exist without him dying.
Yeah.
Which is sad, because I love Tadashi.
Yeah. I guess one quick last thing. I got... The whole, we gotta get out of the portal in time thing was a little Pacific Rim to me. Just a chat. I know we brought it up a little bit. We brought up that movie earlier podcast. But, yeah.
When I had seen this movie, I hadn't seen Pacific Rim.
So right.
It doesn't read that way to me. But, yeah. I mean, like, a lot of sci-fi movies seem to have...
I saw this movie before I saw Pacific Rim. So, that's not the association I had when I first watched it. But, you know, I mean, it's not a Pacific Rim thing. It's more of like a, sci-fi you know, thing. End of the movie. It's like the last maybe 10, 15 minutes. And, oh, no. There's this one last problem. We got to get out of this pickle. And then so someone has to do a dramatic sacrifice to make it all work, right? So
yep.
We've seen that before, like 50 billion times.
Yep.
I
mean, this movie clearly doesn't try to reinvent the wheel here.
No, yeah. But, it's your standard superhero origin story, as Fred likes to say.
Yeah. And the thing is origin stories are almost always my favorite of, like, a superhero saga. Personally, so that might also be part of it for me. And again, like, I would have loved, like, more.
I love me a good origin story. I just feel like I need more from just more complexity or something from the characters. Oh, and, like, random aside, again, I don't want to be like crapping all this movie, because I really do like it, but I just think it's a good kind of movie. It's not like top 10 material for me, honestly. It doesn't, like, mm-hmm. blow me away per se. But someone, and I don't want to be like everything is horrible, but someone did post a video on YouTube about like how Pixar uses music to make you cry, and they kind of used Big Hero 6 as an example of, like, how the music could have been stronger if they had done X, Y, and Z. So, like, they were critiquing specifically that they could have used music differently in that scene where we see Tadashi in the video logs. So maybe I'll link to that. But it was a good video. I don't want to be like, oh, Big Hero 6 was horrible, or, like, aggressively mediocre, because it was not aggressively mediocre. It was good, but I just think, ultimately, I don't know if it'll, like, stand the test of time, you know?
I mean, it has certainly been drowned out by, like, other Disney movies that have been released recently. Mm-hmm. It kind of got drowned out with, you know, Frozen and Zootopia, and, you know, which are both good movies. I like both of those movies, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, I really like it.
You said your favorite parts of it are...
Huh?
Or you think the strongest parts are what?
I know, I just think it's a strong movie in general. And essentially, like, it's creative, you know? Like, sure, maybe the plot might not be, like, tip-top creativity, but, like, the premise and, you know, the world, it's creative, it's diverse, and it's something that I want to see more of.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always down for, like, more POC animated characters. I mean, minus Fred, I mean, like, the main cast, and, like, you know, like, the villains or whatever, the main cast are POC. We have Honey Lemon's Latina, Wasabi's Black, and then, again, Hiro and his brother are multiracial, and then Gogo is Asian. So, it's just like, yeah, it's nice to see that in Disney films, you know? So, good stuff. If you want to watch something, like, that's, like, really fun and lighthearted. Relatively lighthearted. I mean, like, you know, there's grief and stuff. But, you know, relatively lighthearted. With, like, I don't know, younger family members or friends. Like, it's a good go-to movie. Yeah, I feel like we don't cover that many, like, family-friendly things on the show.
Yeah.
But, you know, Big Hero 6.
We don't swear.
We try not to. But yeah, I would say Big Hero 6 is a good movie if you want to just watch something with, like, a little kid or something, or, like, a younger brother or younger sister. Yeah.
Tragic.
Sorry, I know I've been, like, super, like, low energy and, like, whatevs, so sorry, y'all. Anyway, hopefully next week we will get started on season 2. Of Into the Badlands, which is decidedly very, very, very not child-friendly. So please don't show that to your younger siblings or friends.
But, currently, the first season of Into the Badlands is available on Netflix. So if you haven't seen it, you can check it out.
Really? The whole thing? I did not know that. Yeah, so. I'm just still trying to figure out where I'm going to find, episode 1 of season 2. Honestly, I don't know if they're going to release it online for free. Probably not. But I will watch that and I'll let you know. So I think we're not releasing. So we're filming this or whatever, recording this podcast episode like the Sunday that we were supposed to release it, but I'm not releasing it tonight because I need to go to sleep and go to work. But I think this is going to be released on the kind of, sort of, anniversary of our podcast, so yay! Sci-Fi and Color is 1 year old.
Hey,
we made it, fam. I don't know if I believe that we were gonna get to 1 year, but we did it. Thank you so much.
Nine to go before we hit our decade.
So thank you so much for supporting the show, guys. I probably need to look into, like, stuff like fundraising at some point, because that would probably make producing the show easier. But, you know, ways you can support our show that are not monetary or whatever would be to rate us on iTunes, give us 5 stars so more people learn about our show and can listen to us rant and ramble about stuff like Big Hero 6 and Into the Badlands and, you know, all that good stuff. So yeah, rate us on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter. You can, you know, share our episodes or like us or retweet us or whatever your heart desires. So thanks for supporting our show and have a good night, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.